Bhikkhu Sahaviryam Kalabhavahai Vedasvinavadhitamastomavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 95. Dhritarashtra could realize two opposing factors acting before him. He could understand that Krishna was there to remove all the unnecessary burdens of the world. His sons were in an unnecessary burden, and so he expected that they would be killed. At the same time, he could not rid himself of his unlawful affection for his sons. Understanding these two contradictory factors, he offered his respectful obeisances to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right, so he's smart enough and he's trained that he can see it. He's just not purified enough that he can give it up. That's the thing. So he sees it, but because of his attachment, then he goes in that way. So when it comes to knowledge, he knows. But when it comes to practical application, then it's within his attachment. So, but he's not connecting his attachment to Krishna. The knowledge, yes, but the attachment, no. So he doesn't get the benefit. You see. Yeah. So unlawful affection means that he has affection. That's a natural thing. Unlawful means his affection allows them to do things they shouldn't be. Right? Since affection is... The parents are there to see that the children grow up nicely in God consciousness. So he has the affection, but he's not training him in God consciousness. So that's the problem. The BBT purport states, naturally, we would like to ask Dhritarashtra, if you know all this, why don't you behave properly? Of course, this is exactly Dhritarashtra's point. He feels that since events have already been set in motion, he is helpless to change them. In fact, events have been set in motion by his attachment and sinful propensities, and therefore he should have taken responsibility for his own acts. Krishna clearly states in the Bhagavad Gita 5:15, Nadate kasyachit papam. The Supreme Lord does not accept responsibility for anyone's sinful activities, right? Because it's just the modes of nature there. What you do, you have the freedom to act. What's the results of that? That's your doing, not the Lord's doing. It means he's made the laws because the laws are there to become God conscious, to go back to Godhead. So if we don't use it like that, then that's our problem. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, so in other words, it's not like the modern world where the guy goes in, wants a hot cup of coffee, and then if he spills it on his lap, then he sues the company that you didn't tell me it was hot. It's like, you know, yes. Yes.
As you mentioned that Dhritarashtra had knowledge, but he was still attached. Can you say that his knowledge was not profound enough? Because
yes.
Because generally knowledge leads to renunciation.
Well, because if you have knowledge and you practice it, then you get realization. So he had no realization, but he had the knowledge.
So it means he has jnana, but not vijnana.
Yes, he has jnana, but not vijnana. Because the only way to get vijnana is through applying or practicing jnana. Right, and then Krishna will reveal. But if you don't practice it, so he knows these things, but he doesn't practice it in connection with his children. Maybe in other aspects of his kshatriya duties, he does practice it, but not in this area. Is that, yeah. So that's the whole thing, is that first we should have knowledge, and then wanting to be apply it. He has the knowledge, but doesn't want to apply it. He has the knowledge, but he just wants it to go the other way. That's why it's unlawful. You know, he has the knowledge, he's attached, but he wants it to go that way. He's trying to practice, though he's not very good at it. That's not considered unlawful. Because you're practicing it, you're applying it, and with time it will work. But here he's not even trying. Like that. That's why he says he likes to hear these things. They're like nectar, because he is shastrically inclined, but he just can't apply them when it comes to his son. That's the problem. He can't do that.
So it's a weakness of the heart, right?
It's a weakness of heart, yes. And an attachment. You know, so you have both. And then the problem is that he find, you know, he'll therefore take part in finding fault and therefore then committing offense. So all of the four aspects of anartha's he's, but yes, it starts from that weakness of heart.
He finds Dhritarashtra's weakness in ourselves very often. And what would be the
really?
Okay. What's the solution?
Follow the Pandavas.
Yes.
Fight?
No, it means follow their example of how they behave, deal, and everything like that. So we read about it, we hear about it, we appreciate it. All that purifies the heart. All that brings us forward. We see, yes, how to apply that. So that's the idea, is we first get a intellectual understanding of what should be done, what we could have done, you know. And so then with time, we'll slowly start to apply that. And gradually then we get the results. And as we apply that, then the results move quicker.
Can we also say that it's association? Maybe?
It's association, yes. That's why we associate with those more advanced. So if we want to advance, we associate with those who are more advanced. We don't want to advance, we don't do that. This guy. He's walking the machine. Yes.
So as you mentioned previously, we can deal with our attachments slowly, but sometimes the bad factor is against us. So should we actually just do it or suffer, or how can we do that?
The point is trying to connect things to Krishna. And how, you know, some connection to Krishna means the pure devotion means it's done to please Krishna, free from karma and jnana. But otherwise, it can be that it's to please Krishna that has karma and jnana as ourselves, or, you know, whatever it is, we're conscious of Krishna, because we can see as just being conscious of Krishna gives good results. As in the demons and others, how they were conscious and they got benefit. But if you're conscious and it's pleasing to Krishna and free from karma and jnana, then that will be pure devotion. So anywhere in between where you can apply it, you do. Mm-hmm. If you make that endeavor, then you'll see Krishna will reciprocate. If you just let it ride, but you see its connection to Krishna, we'll get some purification, but we'll also, as you said, get those reactions. And then by contemplating that, it's there. But the problem is that path, then the results of that can be, you know, quite, you know, unpleasant. Like that. So it's just a matter of understanding what is there and applying it, because there, it, since it is Krishna's rules, it's the only way it works. So that's the thing with Dhritarashtra. He's hoping against hope that it cannot work like that. Since everything is destiny, then there's that element, it could just be anything. So maybe it will be what I want. But no, it may be so many things, but it's within the context of what's the mechanics of how the modes of nature and the laws of nature work. And so then he's, even though technically probably in other areas he can explain it very nicely, but when it comes to his sons, he can't apply it. So if the sooner we catch it, the less unpleasant the situation is. You know, so if we catch it from, we noticed it in our thoughts, or that, or some other little thing, there you start to work on it, then it generally goes away quite nicely. If it gets to the point where someone else notices it and mentions it, then it's a little worse. When it gets to people who are not pleasant and friendly, yes, notice it, and then, you know, when it comes out as the front page on the Sun, you know, then you know it's a little bit more developed. But the thing, because the soul, the nature of the soul, at any time you can take up Krishna consciousness. It doesn't mean that your environment that you're in won't be adjusted, because that's the thing. Energy always transforms. That's just the way it is. As Lord Chaitanya was, I think, telling Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, that's an acknowledged fact or a proven fact, is energy always is changing. So that you can't be surprised that energy is changing. But the Lord, He's unchanging. So that means that the principles on which the energy is changing is unchangeable. So the laws are unchangeable, but the transformations are always going on. So depending upon what law you follow or don't follow, then that's the change you'll get. Does that make sense? Yeah, because that's what it says, the Lord's unchangeable. That's the point. Brahman doesn't change. That's why it's Brahman. Shakti is what changes. Like that. It is a dangerous policy to claim that we are acting improperly because of destiny or fate. We should take up Krishna consciousness seriously and create an auspicious future for ourselves and our associates. Because if you say it's destiny, but destiny is just what's coming from the past. It's not dealing with what you're doing now. What you get in the future is what you do with now. Like, let's say yesterday I went out and I bought potatoes and I put them in the kitchen. Now today when I go in the kitchen, then according to destiny and fate, I have potatoes. Yes. You understand? So it's not that destiny is forcing us, it's just the situation you're in. Does that make sense?
It has been said. Yeah. I mean, there is a demigoddess called Satvi.
There's a demigoddess called Satvi.
Yeah. And when the child is being born, on the fifth day, we are supposed to worship the Satvi because she writes the destiny of every child. And then, like, because
Satvi writes the destiny of every child. Yeah. On the fifth day.
On the fifth day, when the kid is, child, baby is born.
On the fifth, not on the seventh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
So,
on the fifth day. So they got a four days, you know, how you say? Yes. Yeah, okay. You're truly independent those first 4 days, yes.
So it applies for the non-devotees, not for the devotees.
It applies for the non-devotees, not for the devotees. But she writes the destiny. But by the definition of what we just said, what is she writing?
Whatever past we have done.
Yes, that's all. So whether you're going to have potatoes in the kitchen or carrots or cabbages.
That's Chitra Gupta. That's Chitra Gupta. What is she going to do with that? Chitra Gupta writes everything.
No, he writes what you've done.
Yeah.
And she writes?
She writes what you're going to get,
what you're going to get
from what you've done.
Yeah.
Oh, so she's the secretary of the secretary.
Yeah, it means they're all connected. That means, in other words, the bureaucracy is there in the universe. It's just that, you know, it's a natural thing. It's just that it's in support. So Yamaraj is the one that defines it. And then everybody else carries it out. It's not that she makes it up.
what's the point of worshiping her?
That's our point.
So she is merciful and writes a good destiny.
But the point is, she can only write by what's there.
She can write it.
But it's just like you go into the store, you put 10 rupees on the counter. What can you get?
Nothing.
Inflation, huh? Okay, let us try again. So you go into the store and you put 100 rupees on the counter. What will you get?
Whatever fits in 100.
Whatever fits in 100. So can the store owner be merciful, you know, like that, and give me, you know, something different? Mm-hmm. No, you just, all she writes is what's there. So the point is, she's going to write that anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's not that there's going to be any change.
Mm-hmm.
The point is how you use that, that's what's important. Mm-hmm. Right? Not what you have.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make mm-hmm. sense? Yeah.
My destiny is like history.
History.
Just
yes, it's just that. It's just the background, and then what is the result of that background? You know, it's like we said there. It's like free will is. You mean when you're sitting in a restaurant and you make your order to the waiter,
mm-hmm.
that's your free will.
Yes.
Now, what after, you know, 20 minutes, what the waiter brings you, that's destiny.
Yes.
So that's the thing. We're thinking it's something different. I'm not in control of it. No. All it is a result of what you've done before. Right? So because of his inability to see things as they are and apply things as they are, therefore he's blind. You know, so this life... But it's not that he's blind is the problem. The problem is that actually in consciousness he's blind.
Yes. Yes.
So that's just... So what you do with it, then that's there. Because this is... Vidura also is born into a not an ideal situation, and he does something very nice with it. You know, or the Pandavas, then they're out in the forest when they're born. But, you know, then they associate with the sages and develop everything nicely there. So wherever they are, you see that they use it in Krishna's service. That's then what we're talking about. Devotional service means using what you have. Body, mind, and words. It's not about the situation. It doesn't say that.
Mm-hmm.
It means you may, in doing what I'm working with now, I may try to take part as an instrument that the transformation of the environment is to a more favorable condition as recommended by the scriptures. That I can take part in. But if I'm going to say, no, I'll do nothing and it should just happen on its own, you know, it's up to Krishna. But Krishna can only give you what you order. You know what I'm saying? You go into the store and just, you know, stand there, you know, then it's, oh, what would you like? Well, you know, well, whatever you want to give, you know, so it doesn't really work like that. So he's working here, it's up to Krishna, our destiny and this and that. But that's not taking responsibility for the results of our actions. That's all. You know, so that's all. Destiny is just, or fate is just, result of what you've done before. You know, because scriptures say, you do this, you'll get this. So when we get this, then, oh, it's my destiny. Yes, because of what you've done. Now, what you do with it, then that's what's important. Does that make sense?
And this depends on our consciousness.
It's on consciousness. And that'll depend on our association. So if we see that the importance, then we'll associate with those who are more advanced. Then from that, then we'll start to try to adjust our consciousness.
Yes.
Yes.
Dhritarashtra, he had both association. He had very good association. And of course, he was influenced by his sons.
Yes.
But not until they all died, he took the proper association seriously and
yes.
then went to the forest.
Yes.
So that means his conditioning was more strong than any association he was getting before.
That's because of desire. Conditioning is strong, but the point is you have that desire, so then you can apply it. The human form, when you get down below that, then their conditioning is such that that's just the way it's going to go. They're only going to go through the results of their previous actions. Does that make sense? So all the moving and non-moving living entities then outside of the human form, they're just going to be acting according to the results. But in the human form, you always have that choice. Now, the more they're in ignorance, the less they notice that choice, the less they think they have a choice. No, you have to do this. But technically, you always have a choice. It does mean that there may be repercussions you don't want. That's the thing, is we want to do the right thing but get everything we want. But sometimes doing the right thing means you don't necessarily get what you want. You know.
Yes. Can we say that the weakness of the heart comes from the strength of desire?
Weakness of the heart comes from strength of desire. Basically, it comes down to I'm the controller and enjoyer. That's your original weakness of heart. Mm-hmm. Then that manifests as a specific weakness of heart.
I mean, in general, if desire is strong, then the heart is weak. Can we say
that? I mean, material desire.
Yeah.
In one sense, you can say I'm metaphysically, yes, so like that. But you do have those that are very focused and know what they want to get done and can be, you know, very austere and do all the right things to get what they want. But you see here, Dhritarashtra is not doing that. He's just going along for the ride. So he's not making any endeavor. It means when Vidura comes and talks to him or someone talks to him, he'll agree because he hears it and it's logical, it makes sense. But because of his attachment, then he can't. So that's why you'll see is when he's talking with a person, he actually appreciates what they're saying. In the way of that, it's shastric, it's technical, it's presented nicely, it's conclusion. That, he likes that part. But the part that it means that he can't maintain, he can't support his sons in their endeavors, that part he doesn't like. That's why then you see is then when he's talking with his sons, then he'll present that side of it. That, yes, he was saying all this, but I didn't want to say anything at that time. I was just biding my time, because if I say something now, then our plans will be revealed and this and that. So that's the point, is he just goes with whatever's happening. So that weakness that's there then makes it, that's why he's not a good king. You know, point is, if he wasn't a king, he wouldn't have to, the decisions, the results of this attachment would be small. You know, they wouldn't be so great as this, but because he's the king, and the king happens to be emperor, so then that's going to be, the results of that are going to, you know, be much greater. Finally, one may argue that, after all, Dhritarashtra is involved in the Lord's pastimes, and is actually his eternal associate. In answer to this, we may say that the Lord's pastimes are not only entertaining, but also didactic. And the lesson here is that Dhritarashtra should have acted properly. This is what the Lord wanted to teach. Dhritarashtra claims that Krishna came to relieve the burden of the earth, but the earth's burden is precisely improper behavior of its inhabitants. So let us take the lesson the Lord wants to teach her and be instructed for our benefit. Right, so that's the thing to learn, not to point, no, but he's this, he's that, oh, but what can he do? That's not the point. The point is to learn from it. Like that. You know, so we're in a situation from our past, so learn from that, and now what will you do to make it Krishna conscious? Like that. Doesn't mean that materially it will go great in the beginning, but, you know, that we have to understand, is that The important thing is the spiritual aspect, not the material. Because the soul is spiritual. So what's beneficial to the soul, that's what we apply. Then other things then will come after.
So now this is a step of contemplating. After hearing.
Oh,
reading,
contemplating, yes, yes, exactly.
Work on that and
yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So that's why we contemplate. If not, at least we're in good association, we do nice things, because as Prabhu pointed out, we have a tendency is to not contemplate, we avoid those areas. But if you associate with people who work in those areas, if it's according to your, you know, it's an area you're supposed to be in, then we'll start to get that benefit, we'll start to take it seriously. Mm-hmm. You know? You know, it's like if in the morning, you know, we're just talking and on our phone and all that during japa, then, you know, it'll continue like that. But if we just go and those devotees just sit down and just chant nicely, go and sit with them and chant, then we'll see it'll start to go the other way. Dhritarashtra concluded, I offer my obeisances to him, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who creates this universe by the inconceivable activity of his material energy, and then distributes the various modes of nature by entering within the creation. From him, the meaning of whose pastimes is unfathomable, come both the entangling cycle of birth and death and the process of deliverance from it. Footnote 42. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. Then he offered his obeisances to the Lord, quote, creating this universe by its inconceivable process, and after entering it, he divides the gunas into goodness, passion, and ignorance. I offer my respects to the Supreme Lord, who is the deliverer from the wheel of samsara, the purpose of whose pastimes is difficult to understand. Krishna inspires you to enlighten me by his order. Enlighten Dhritarashtra. And he inspires me to not understand with the order. Do not be enlightened. Who will be able to understand the purpose of his incomprehensible pastimes, right? So he's taking himself out of the loop here. The point is why would we look at it if we don't include ourselves in the loop? Right? Why look at it without our involvement? What's the point? Because that's the thing, the Vedas, it's not an academic approach, it's a practical approach. So, him seeing that this goes on, that he's controlling these things, he can't blame it on someone else. No, it's his decision to not. So since it's his decision, then he won't be influenced. Right? Because you don't want to be influenced, therefore the modes of nature then don't allow you to be influenced. But it's your desire. If you desire to be influenced, then they'll start to adjust. But he doesn't want to be, and he's saying, see, it's not allowing me to understand. No, it's not. But that's because that's what you want. So this is the destiny or the result of our previous endeavor.
This is a very common argument, you know, Maharaj.
Common argument.
Yeah, because many times when we say devotees, please come to the temple, then they say that whenever the Lord desires, we will come.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, then next time then you tell them, yes, you know, I had this great business concept and was thinking you'd be involved, but actually it's not up to you, it's up to whenever the Lord wants you to be involved. So, you know, yeah, forget about it. And then see what they say. And then they go, yes, you know, it's just, we're all just following the destiny of the Lord. And all that. So that's the whole point when it comes to, you know, that means they say it like in Calcutta. When you're coming to Mayapur, you know, when the Lord wills and all that, and, you know, when you're going to make your next business contract. Well, you know, that I'm working on now, I have to make a few phone calls. You know, somehow or another, it's not when the Lord wills. You know. So that's the thing, is that they use it as an excuse, like Dhritarashtra. You know, and then they feel so good because Shastra does say that that's how it works. And so they feel, they take shelter of that, see, I don't have to work. So they get the results of that. Who will be able to understand the purpose of his incomprehensible pastimes? You should not say to me, you have fallen into the wheel of samsara, because he will also deliver me in the future, samsara chakra gati. Yes, he will, at the point where he wants to be.
Mm-hmm. So he has that much faith also in Krishna, that he will be delivered.
He has faith. That's why you see from the chapter, Ill-Motivated Dhritarashtra, or is this, it's not this. No, this is there's one where he tells the whole philosophy and how Krishna is the Supreme Lord and everything and what's going to happen. But he just has that attachment. He can't act on it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So that's what we're supposed to learn from this, is that we should not be like Dhritarashtra, because if we take that position, it didn't work out good for him. Why would it work out good for us?
Which of these characters is more difficult?
mother is very good, so he knows what is right and ethical. He cannot do it because mother is bad. Mother is low character. Or somebody like Karna, that his whole direction is off. But he does many like virtues and nice things because mother is good character.
What means of the two? Means you have two, the combination of the father and mother, is that the father gives that whole the whole spirit. The mother gives the act nature. Right? In other words, what kind of what abilities and skills, knowledge at the area is there. For the father it's the mood of it. So the mood, so the natural thing is that the form follows the mood. So that's why if you put the two are matched, then that works very nicely. Then you get a child that has both. But if it's mixed, then you'll get the child to have I say both, but they're different, right? So if it's matched, both he has both, but they're the same. Does that make sense? So it's like, you know, father's a Brahmin, mother's a Kshatriya. The nature will be that of a Kshatriya, but they'll have kind of that Sattvic flavor to it. You know what I'm saying? So that won't work as good. That's why Karna would not fight with Yudhishthira, because he said he's a Brahmin. He's not a Kshatriya. He's too nice. You know, like that. So, does that make sense?
Can you say which one of them is more difficult to rectify and properly engage? Which of those two? Mixes.
Mean coming from the father or from the mother.
Yeah.
I mean, the areas you can work in and all that, that's kind of fixed. The attitude, then, is the more important one to work on. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like someone's a manager, then they're going to be a manager. But now the attitude in which they do that, that's the important one. So that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, he gave everything to Krishna, but it's not, you know, that they neither of them really come to a serious, to a devotional platform. They kind of come to that neutral platform. You know? I mean, Karna, in one sense, he offered everything to Krishna, so then. That's there, but he doesn't have that devotion. But it was directed at Krishna. The way we see Dhritarashtra, it mentions because of his, you know, offensive behavior and that, then he only got liberation. He didn't go back to Godhead. Like that. You know, what'll happen later, that's another thing, but we're talking right now. You know, like with Shishupal and the other demons, we're looking at the long term, so then they go back to Godhead. But they initially just are liberated, merged in Brahman.
So that Kunti, her devotion, so it is only like when it's stated in Bhagavad Gita that a devotee can bring the family members.
Means the example is that if you have a sandalwood tree in a forest, the whole forest smells like sandalwood. But if you have a fire in the hollow of one tree in the forest, then the whole forest is burned. So it's, you know, it's all by influence in that. So we see is because of Duryodhana, then the whole Kuru dynasty is destroyed, right? And but because of Yudhishthira, then the whole dynasty is glorified.
So would that not? They would also include Karna, one could say.
Karna meaning?
They're their brother, like they are so pure, the brothers.
Means they would include him, but. That he's not including himself.
Yes.
Right? Because of that Kshatriya nature, he can't forgive things very easily. Means Yudhishthira can, but not Karna.
Would one then say, like in the end of life, that if family members, if there is a son in the family that is devoted, then it's bringing the...
Yeah, then everyone will get benefit, yes.
But still they have to be inclined.
Even if they're not inclined, they'll get benefit. If they're inclined, they'll get more benefit. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. After hearing this statement, Akura could clearly understand that Dhritarashtra was not going to change his policy of discriminating against the Pandavas in favor of his sons. He at once took leave of his friends in Hastinapur and returned to his home in the kingdom of Yadus. Right, so he has to stay for some time to know the whole extent. Then when he discusses this with Dhritarashtra, then he can actually understand how much is there. Because he understands the whole background, so then now the key element, how it's, what's his mood, then you can see that. Because if you went and asked him first, he wouldn't know the extent how it's being applied, and that plus then they would know he's looking for that. So then everybody would be at their best behavior. So he'd never see anything. Like that, yeah. After returning home, he vividly informed Lord Krishna and Balaram of the actual situation in Hastinapur and the intentions of Dhritarashtra. Akura was sent to Hastinapur by Krishna to study these. And by the grace of the Lord, he was successful. Right? So even though he was, a good in the diplomatic area, that's why he was chosen. But it's by the Lord's grace that it works. It's not that, yes, he had that skill, that's why he was successful. No, it's by the Lord's grace. That's the way everybody is. Everybody has the ability in whatever their area, but whether it's successful or not, that's up to the Lord. It's not that we can say, no, I have this knowledge and skill, that's why I'm going to be successful. You can't say that. No one can say that. So to say that, yes, if I have these material qualifications, that will be success. No one can say. It means if it's your duty, that's what you do. But it's because it's your duty, that's why you do it, not because, yes, by me doing this, then I'll make everything work and make it all right. No. You follow Krishna's laws, then things work nicely. You don't follow the laws, they don't work nicely. Srila Sukadev Goswami concluded, having thus appraised himself of the king's attitude, Akura, the descendant of Yadu, took permission from his well-wishing relatives and friends and returned to the capital of the Yadavas. Akura reported to Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna how Dhritarashtra was behaving toward the Pandavas. Thus, O descendant of the Kurus, he fulfilled the purpose for which he had been sent. Conclusion. One should not blame the Lord for the wrong application of his free will. Right? It means we have to take that responsibility. So we see that's Dhritarashtra's weakness. That's his problem. His sinful activities will not be excused on the plea of bodily attachment to family members. One who does not know the subtle law of and who thus gives up the devotional principles carries with him only the reactions of his sinful activities. Right? So, if you don't follow the devotional principles and we give that up, just act on the material, we'll just get the material reactions. That's just whatever's due to, according to our work, then what we'll get. Right? So, not that there'll be something else. It's not that you do your work and you get your neighbor's results. That makes sense. Yeah. Chapter 50. Krishna establishes the city of Dwarka, Pratigya. The Supreme Personality of Godhead creates, maintains, and dissolves the cosmic manifestation merely by his will. So it's by his will all this goes on. It's not that something else, he has to do it, like that. It's that, or there's a difficulty that's there. He'd like to do this, but he can't, so then he'll switch, because he's God, so he's smart, so he knows when he can't do something, and then he switches. No, it's by his will it all happens. That's not, Ajaya Kashika. This chapter relates how Lord Krishna defeated Jarasandha 17 times in battle and then constructed the city of Dwarka. After Kamsa was killed, his two queens, Ishti and Prapti, went to the home of their father, Jarasandha, and sorrowfully described to him how Krishna had made them widows. Upon hearing this account, King Jarasandha became angry. Right? It's they know why they got killed, but it's still they got killed, and this is what happened. So that's the interesting thing is even we know the knowledge, it doesn't mean that it works any better. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. The Vedic culture, you have the knowledge, so you have better tools, but it still depends how you use it. Just because you have better tools doesn't mean you'll use it any better. Does that make sense? If you don't know how to drive, right, and you have yourself, you know, our Fiat 500, you don't know how to drive and we have a Ferrari, it's still going to be the same problem. But the point is if you do know how to drive, then, one, you'll do fine in the Fiat, but you can do so much more with the Ferrari. That's the whole point, is that the Vedic system, it's not perfect in itself. It's perfect because it comes from Krishna to be used in the servants of Krishna. Right? As the, how you say, Gujarati phrase, from Srinathji for Srinathji. Upon hearing this account, King Jarasandha became angry. He vowed to rid the earth of all the Yadavas, and he gathered an immense army to lay siege to Mathura. When Sri Krishna saw Jarasandha attacking, the Lord considered the reasons for his descent to this world, and then decided to destroy Jarasandha's army, which was a burden to the earth. Yes, because just by his will, he's come, so he decides he'll destroy his army, right? Not Jarasandha, just the army. Two effulgent chariots suddenly appeared, equipped with drivers and furnishings, together with all the Lord's personal weapons. Seeing this, Lord Krishna addressed Lord Baladev. My dear brother, Jarasandha is now attacking Mathurapuri, so please mount your chariot and let's go destroy the enemy's army. The two lords took up their weapons, mounted their chariots, and went forth from the city. When Lord Krishna came before his opponent's army, he sounded his conch shell, striking fear into his enemies' hearts. King Jarasandha surrounded Krishna and Balaram. with his soldiers, chariots, and so on. And and the women of the city, having climbed up to the roofs of the palaces, became extremely unhappy because they could not see the lords. Then Krishna twanged his bow and started to rain down a torrent of arrows upon the enemy soldiers. Soon Jarasandha's unfathomable army had been annihilated. So here unfathomable means it's very big. Not unfathomable means, yes, you know, the White Rose Army had, you know, how you say, 1,500 people, and the, you know, Red Rose Army had, you know, 973. We're not talking these great battles that this, you know, how you say, define the destiny of a nation here. We're talking about something very large. Mm-hmm. Then Lord Baladev arrested Jarasandha and was about to bind him up with ropes when Sri Krishna had Baladev release the king. Lord Krishna reasoned that Jarasandha would assemble another army and return again to fight. Right? So he just brought what he thought was a good enough army. And then when he's defeated, he'll bring again. Well, if they kill him, then that means all these other, demoniac soldiers will be a burden on the earth. So since he's come to destroy the demoniac soldiers, therefore, he then let him go so he'd bring more. This would facilitate Krishna's goal of removing the earth's burden. Released, Jarasandha returned to Magadha and vowed to perform austerities with the aim of avenging his defeat. Right, so they know that if austerities gives you the potency, so he'll figure he wasn't potent enough, so he'll do austerities. So they're following the religious recommendations, so it's pious, that's why they get results. But it's not devotional, so therefore it's a waste of time. The other kings advised him that his defeat was only a reaction of his karma. Thus informed, King Jarasandha withdrew to his kingdom with a heavy heart. Right? It was just your karma, you know, so like that. So in the future, your karma will be better, right? So he'll go and get another army. Krishna rejoined the citizens of Mathura who began rejoicing, singing signs of songs of triumph, and arranged victory celebrations. The Lord brought all the warriors' jewelry and ornaments that had been picked up from the battlefield and presented them to Maharaj Ugrasena. Because all the destroyed soldiers, then they just take all the wealth and everything that's there, you know, what's good and like that. And then that becomes part of the treasury. Like that. Does that make sense? Jarasandha attacked the Yadavas in Mathura 17 times, and each time his armies were totally destroyed. Then, as Jarasandha prepared to attack for the 18th time, a warrior named Kalayavana, who had been searching for a worthy opponent, was sent by Narad Muni to fight the Yadavas. With 30 million soldiers, Kalayavana laid siege to the Yadava capital. Lord Krishna looked upon the attack with concern, for he knew that with Jarasandha's arrival imminent, there was a serious danger that the simultaneous attack of these two enemies might endanger the Yadavas. Therefore, the Lord constructed a wonderful city within the sea as a safe haven for the Yadavas. Then he brought them all there by his mystic power. The city was fully populated with members of all four social orders, and within it no one felt the pangs of thirst and hunger. The various demigods headed by Indra each offered as tribute to Lord Krishna the same opulences they had originally obtained from him to establish their positions of authority. Right? So Krishna had given them their opulences as a demigod so that they could then establish their authority and perform their activities. So they gave the same opulences to Krishna. And so whatever is their area, that's what they would offer to Krishna. Does that make sense? So what you have, according to your nature, what facilities you have, that's what you offer to Krishna. You don't have to offer something else. Like someone else offers something different, you don't have to offer the same thing. Because everyone's nature is different. So Indra will offer Indra stuff. Vayu will offer Vayu stuff, like that. Right? You may have general categories. They're all kings, so they're offering opulence and this and that. So that way it is. But even within that, there's detail. So yes, you'll offer what's within the nature of your dharma, and then within that, the details of, you know, your abilities. Okay. Yeah. Once he saw his subject safely settled, Lord Sri Krishna took permission from Lord Baladev and went out of Mathura unarmed. Shloka Anusharanam. Summary of verses 1 to 42. Krishna defeats Jarasandha. 43 to 57. Krishna erects the city of Dwarka. Verses 1 to 42. Krishna defeats Jarasandha. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, when Kamsa was killed, O heroic descendant of Bharata, his two queens, Asti and Prapti, went to their father's house in great distress. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, according to Vedic civilization, a woman is never independent. She has three stages of life. In childhood, a woman should live under the protection of her father. A youthful woman should live under the protection of her young husband. In the event of the death of her husband, she should live under the protection of her grown-up sons. Or if she has no grown-up sons, she may go back to her father and live as a widow under his protection. It appears that Kamsa had no grown-up sons. Therefore, after his wives became widows, they returned to the shelter of their father. You know, so unless they were grown up that they could take care of, then they would just continue on in that way. But if they weren't, either they weren't grown up or there weren't sons like this, then they would just go back to the father.
If father is not so long-lived?
Father is not so long-lived, then you have to see.
Brothers. Hmm?
Brothers. He's not impressed with that one. So in other words, it would be some senior family members or friends or something like that. The idea is that that one is always staying under some authority.
So father, in a sense that somebody's taking care of, not just...
Yes, means it would naturally be the father, but it can be anybody who can function in that fatherly capacity. That's the principle. Yeah. You know, it's just like the Vedas are seven mothers, you know, because of the nature. Like that. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, the sorrowful queens... Did we read what Prabhupada said?
Yes.
Yes, okay. The sorrowful queens told their father, King Jarasandha of Magadha, all about how they had become widows. Hearing this odious news, O king, Jarasandha was filled with sorrow and anger, and he began the greatest possible endeavor to rid the earth of the Yadavas, with a force of 23 Akshahini divisions. Whoa. He laid siege to the Yadu capital, Mathura, on all sides. Footnote 43. An Akshauhini was a standard fighting force in ancient times. Each consisted of 21,870 soldiers on... Okay. On elephants, 21,870 charioteers, 610 cavalrymen and 109,350 infantry soldiers. Yeah, and there's a proportion also, Prabhupada explains it. It goes up, whatever it is, and there's this much more of that one and this much so. Yeah. I think Prabhupada explains, or is that in Mahabharata? Maybe it's Mahabharata. That's Mahabharata explains it. Okay. Although Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the original cause of this world, when he descended to the earth, he played the role of a human being. Thus, when he saw Jarasandha's assembled army surrounding a city like a great ocean overflowing its shores, and when he saw how this army was striking fear into his subjects, the Lord considered that his suitable response should be according to the time, place, and specific purpose of his current incarnation. Yeah, so that means... Yeah, it's like 2.5 million soldiers.
Yeah, 23 Akshahini.
Yeah. So, I mean, Akshahini is like over 200,000 soldiers. So.
Yes.
Yeah, it's big. Hmm? Mm. No, double that. 4 million.
More than 4 million.
Yeah, more than 4 million. Yeah. That's a lot of soldiers. I mean, I'm not sure that any present military army have that many soldiers on the ground.
North Korea.
No.
North Korea, they have over 2 million army.
2 million, but that's still not 4 million. Like that. Because even you say is that you have that much in military, a lot of them are also the office staff, backup staff, and everything like that. Yeah. These are the actual fighting things. We're not even talking about the backup. You don't mention those. Right. Like that. So it's, you know, all the guys to make the tents and all the guys to cook, you know, all that stuff, right? Like that. The guys to peel the potatoes. So imagine how many of those guys there are. Right? The Supreme Lord thought, since it is such a burden on the earth, I will destroy Jarasandha's army, consisting of Akshauhinis, of foot soldiers, horses, chariots, and elephants. Right? Because these foot soldiers, horses, chariots, and elephants, this is what's on a chessboard. Right? The pawns are the foot soldiers. The horses is the cavalry. The chariots is the bishop.
Yes.
And the elephants are the rook, the ones in the corner. It look like a castle. Which the king of Magadha had assembled from all subservient kings and brought together there. But Jarasandha himself should not be killed, since in the future he will certainly assemble another army. This is the purpose of my present incarnation, to relieve the earth of its burden, protect the pious, and kill the impious. I also assume other bodies to protect religion and to end religion and end irreligion whenever it flourishes in the course of time. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. As Lord Govinda was thinking in this way, two chariots as effulgent as the sun suddenly descended from the sky. They were complete with drivers and equipment. Footnote 44. Srila Jiva Goswami and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur agree that the chariots came down from the Lord's own abode, Vaikuntha. Yeah, otherwise we would mention that Indra sent or this. No, they just appeared. That means they're his. The Lord's eternal divine weapons also appeared before him spontaneously. Seeing these, Lord Krishna, Lord of the senses, addressed Lord Sankarsha. Thank you.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Shri Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivinoda ki, Shri Nitai Prabhupada ki.